our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have here on the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, she's here on the program. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape. Usually, that is on a Tuesday, and she is here one day early, but it's the same deal other than that. If you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. So if it would be long-distance call, use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. You have questions about trees, shrubs, flowers, stuff you can eat, things in the home landscape, houseplants, we can do that too. Any and all of that is welcome. 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. It seems like, man, within the last week, 10 days, everything out there is just completely nuts. It's going crazy. Mm-hmm. Everything, it seems like everything that can bloom virtually is.
And actually, we're getting, at least in our area, we're getting a nice show of the early flowering stuff like magnolias. You know, so many times magnolias get hit with that late frost and we don't get much out of them. But I just, as I was coming here today, they're just magnificent. So there's some good fortune to that warm weather. I wish we'd get a little rain. At least in our area, we're pretty dry.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I kind of think within the we are expecting some within the next couple of days. I guess we'll see if that pans out. This
we're
afternoon,
just never
tonight.
Happy. It's too too wet, too dry.
Absolutely.
Too hot, too cold.
All right. Well, we got somebody to talk with. Let's do that. Line one, right here. Hello.
Hi. We have a huge fir tree that got hit in the two ice storms that we had, the one that we had in January and the one we had years ago on Valentine's Day. Same side of the tree. The lower branches of this tree, which are gracefully arching, block the view of our canoes from our house. And but there's this big open space now, and you can sort of see the canoes, and I'm wondering if there's something that I can plant there in the understory of this fir tree that's got some of these. It all happened on the same side of the tree. I don't know whether the ice storm keeps coming from one direction it gets more. It sort of faces southeast, but has the tree would shade it. Anyway, I'm wondering if something like a rhododendron would survive there. I know you have to find the right microclimate for a rhododendron to work. Or do you have another suggestion of something that's evergreen that might?
So how would it shade it? Did you say? It's going to shade it part of the day, but what?
Yeah, afternoon it would shade it.
Shade it in the afternoon, that's fine. How close were you planning on planting them? Because I will tell you, it's really tough to grow things underneath trees like that. It's such a dry shade. It's very, very difficult without adding a lot of water on a regular basis. So it's a much higher maintenance situation. So if you can bring them out in front of them a little bit, they do much better. Is that a possibility or?
Well, that would reduce the size of our yard considerably.
Oh, okay.
And then also, it would expose the plant some more. So, it doesn't have much above it anymore. It's more that the shading comes from the branches that are still left on the southwest part of the tree.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It was kind of took out, like, I think 9 branches this time, and I took out several the time before. So it's just kind of like this whole quadrant of the tree in terms of branches is gone.
Right. Well, would you, and maybe this, again, makes your yard too small, have you thought about anything like some of the upright arborvitaes or something like that, one of the evergreens, like along those lines?
Arborvitaes never appealed to me.
Okay.
Somehow. I don't know what it is about them.
And that's okay.
I guess I like something that's looser looking than, I think they're too formal for my.
Okay. Well, that's fine. That's fine. I was just trying to think of something evergreen like that, like you say, that would, you could certainly try the rhododendrons. They certainly are evergreen. Now, realize it takes a while for them to get to any height, like up to 5 or 6 feet. So I don't know how tall this thing needs to be. How tall does it need to be? Whatever you're doing.
I think 5 feet would probably do.
Okay, well, then maybe that's not going to be a big issue for you.
Are there some varieties that are better suited to our climate?
There is one, and again, I'd look at the color of the flowers. Not everybody likes the color of the flowers, but they're probably the easiest one to grow. It's called a PJM rhododendron, and it has a little smaller leaf, but it has kind of it's a pretty flower. It's pink, but it's almost a darker pink, almost a muddy pink. And it's pretty, but I think you need to look at the color and see if you like it or not. Because it doesn't blend well with other things very well. But if it's by itself, I think it works out great. Mm. And it's probably one of the, by far one of the easier ones to grow. It's not nearly as finicky because, you know, with the rhododendrons, they have to have an acidic soil. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to do some soil preparation, add sulfur, add peat moss, something that's so you have high organic matter and then that more acidic soil because they're going to have to, you're going to have to do more site preparation, which I would still do even with PJMs. They're just
even
a little bit tougher.
All those fir needles that have been falling over the years.
Yeah, despite all that happening, it really isn't enough to make the soil acidic. Mm. So you really have to still do the whole sulfur thing. Mm. So you may want to try that. There certainly are other, I don't know if you, again, I don't know, maybe you don't like use. They're probably a little bit, maybe, again, more formal. Is this a situation where you're going to eventually take down this fir tree? Have you thought about something even like a hemlock or something where eventually you'd even take down the fir tree?
It's hard to think about taking them down because they're such prominent features, and then they wouldn't. We would have to have somebody climb the tree to take it down. It's not where you can get a bucket truck in to do it, so it wouldn't be inexpensive. So,
So hemlocks actually work out very nicely. They're much more open kind of look, not nearly so formal like you were saying with the arborvitaes. They actually can be trimmed if you don't like, you know, because eventually they're going to get to be trees.
Yeah.
That might be one issue for you. Not going to get as tall, but certainly boxwoods, something like those would at least make things look different. If you want sort of a quick cut thing, it's not going to be all the time, but you could even do some ornamental grasses that are certainly that tall. Mm. But realize you cut them down. So this time of year, you'd still see the canoes.
Yeah, maybe I should move the canoes.
Actually, I think canoes look nice, so maybe.
Well, these haven't been used much. They're getting kind of grimy looking.
Oh, okay.
I have to wash the
So there might be some issues there where you actually could do some ornamental grasses or maybe combinations of a couple things. And maybe it's not so much covering up the look, but getting people to sort of look a different way. Sometimes just sort of steering your eye a little differently.
Yeah.
Sometimes helps.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
good luck.
Thank you. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guest, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us here on the program once a month to talk about things that grow on the home landscape, usually on a Tuesday. Tomorrow would be the day, one day early. We just could not go an extra day without seeing her. So we got questions you can call us. Should we talk about lawn? Are we now at a time for either and fertilizing and weed control?
Yeah, this is where the University of Illinois is just a little bit different. Normally, we recommend that you wait until around the 1st of May or so, actually do your first fertilization. The feeling is that the research has shown that you get more leaf disease problems if you fertilize very early in the season. So you're better off fertilizing late the year before and then waiting until you're around the 1st of May or so, do your first fertilization. You certainly could be thinking about crabgrass control. This would be something that normally the April here, usually mid-April, you got to be thinking about putting down crabgrass control if you need it. You may not really need it. It's not something you have to do every year, but if in certain areas you found you've had that problem, probably your best bet is actually to look at the lawn. Why isn't it? Because crabgrass, any of the weeds come in because the grass is open. So maybe the best thing to do, or is the best thing to do, is why isn't the grass growing very well? Maybe you need to think about core aerifying. Maybe you need to think about reseeding it, those kinds of things, and then use the herbicides and such if you truly need later on.
Okay. Well, we got some other people lined up here ready to go. Somebody on cell phone. We'll start with them on line one. Hello.
Hello there. I'm sorry this is a simple question, but driving around Champaign, I see a lot of trees that are blooming with white flowers right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know, do you know what kind of tree that is?
Do they have really big petals? Or can you tell?
No, it's small. I think they seem pretty small.
Okay. It could.
But there's a lot of them.
Okay. Could be either star magnolia. And those are more like a small tree, large shrub-looking thing. But they have long kind of strap-like petals. And then there are also some of the early flowering cherries and stuff are blooming right now. Cherries and plums are blooming right now.
Okay.
So it could be those. Those have a little bitty kind of a cluster of white flowers.
Yeah, those are the ones I've been seeing. The cherry and plum, you said, right?
Yes, that group is blooming right now. So that could be. We're a little early for crab apples and some of those.
Okay, thank you. very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have growing, it actually belongs to the folks who live next to us, but right in between their house and ours, what is, I think, some kind of a cherry that has these very small white flowers. Mm-hmm. It's just stunningly beautiful
tree.
Yeah,
they are gorgeous.
And then when it gets to the point where the flowers start to come off, if there's a little breeze, it looks like it's snowing.
Which is neat, which I think is pretty neat. Yeah. We're a little early. I mean, Bradford pears might be in there, but I think we're still a little early for them, so...
It's probably cherries and plums. And the red buds seem like they're just about
ready
to
go. Red buds are just now getting ready to pop out. So I think we're going to get a nice flower show here for the spring. We don't always get that because of the cold weather sometimes, but looks like we're going to have it this year.
Okay. The next caller is in Champaign and line two. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about lawns.
Okay.
Are you still with me?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Sorry. We just bought a house, my wife and I, and we have a couple of dogs, and I've been told that dogs can, I mean, just the elimination can do some awful things to lawns. And just over the winter, we just bought the house last summer, and over the winter, we've noticed that there are a lot of brown spots showing up in our yard where they typically go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if there are any coping strategies for dealing with that, for you know, trying to keep the lawn living.
Yeah. And do you have a female dog?
We have both male and female.
Okay. It could be that. I guess I just wonder, are you pretty confident that's what it is? Unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot you can do other than when they're out there, you could dilute it with water.
Okay.
Now, that's not something that, you know, is going to be real easy to do, but that would be your best bet as far as combating it. Is that it? Right after they go, you just dilute it with water.
All right.
But I would also check and make sure you don't have something else going on there. So you might just actually get down there and maybe dig around a little bit and see if, you know, maybe you've got something else going on there. So I'd be real careful in that. And this would be a great time to reseed. I would go ahead and reseed those spots now.
Okay. I mean, is there anything specifically I should look for?
I think probably the thing, like if it's like really matted down, maybe, because sometimes we shouldn't have gotten too many problems over the winter, but sometimes you can get some matting and stuff where there might be an indication of fungal problems. Also, I'd wonder, is it true the grass is gone, or maybe you've got a weed problem? There's a weed called nimblewill, which is a warm season grass, and it stays brown this time of year. And it doesn't green up until late. And so sometimes it's right now it's very obvious, but it's a weed problem. It's not really anything else going on.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thank you. Next caller is in Aurora, line number four. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi. How are you?
Well, how do you feel privileged? I tore myself away from working on my income tax to call you.
Now, I would like to take that as a compliment, but if you're like me, anything, the wind blowing would, take me away from my taxes.
I wonder if there, what ornamental grass, I wanted to get my yard looking wilder than it is, what ornamental grass might attract birds?
Oh, I think, how tall do you want it to be, or do you care?
Whatever.
Whatever?
I'm not going to, the taller the better.
Well, I think, actually, our native grass, the big blue stem, I think is a beautiful grass.
Oh, I never thought of that, and why didn't I? I've worked on prairies.
Oh, sure. Big blue stem actually is a very pretty grass. They even have made some selections, if you want to go that route, they've actually made some selections that are bluer, have a bluer cast to them. Also, Indian grass is the other native grass.
That's my favorite,
Indian grass. They've also made some selections of that for, if you like that blue color, so there are actually some cultivars out there. You certainly could go with a straight species. So either one of those, I think, are very beautiful grasses and look very nice. There's the heavy metal switchgrass. The switchgrasses are real pretty.
Yeah,
those are real pretty, and all those have seeds that the birds would eat.
Well, thank you much.
Sure,
I had
sure.
the answer.
You're pretty
I
grasses.
Knew the answer.
Yeah, you
I
knew it. You just didn't know it.
What?
you had the answer all along. You just didn't know it.
Yes. I guess I was thinking of some of the other ornamental grasses. And of course, this is a question that's difficult. How can you remove garlic weed?
Oh, you mean garlic mustard or garlic?
The little green leaf that's out now, and it permeates the whole garden. I mean, it's all over.
That looks like a little onion thing
coming
up? Yeah. Unfortunately, I wish I had a really good answer for you, but unfortunately, your best bet is to try to dig up those little bulbils. You know, they have little bulbs in there.
Really?
And you can try herbicides, but it just doesn't work very well. So, unfortunately.
So dig is the only answer?
Yep, yep. And they're not very big, but they're enough that the thing just keeps coming back.
Yes. So, where do they come from?
Good question. You know, they certainly can start out from seed, but I think a lot of times the little bulbs are very, very tiny when they first start out. So I think that's part of it. They get moved around and certainly by seed.
They were bulbs. Thank you much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks for the call. Let's see. We will go next to another caller, and this person is in Danville on line number 3. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a problem in that I did not trim down my butterfly bush as early as I should. And the stalks are about 3 feet high. And about 2 weeks ago when I went out to trim them, when I cut it, it was quite a bit of green inside. Mm-hmm. So I quit. Should I just leave it as is or go ahead and cut it?
I would go ahead and cut them back.
About and because 4 or 5 inches?
Yeah. I usually cut mine back to about 6 to 8, somewhere in there. And because if you leave them, they tend to get real gangly and they're not very pretty.
Okay.
So even if it's still green that far up, I'd still trim them down. And that would be true for a lot of the plants that kind of stay green. Oh, I don't know if people are familiar with the blue Spirea caryopteris. That's another one. Mm-hmm. Russian sage is the other one.
I have that too. Why should I
would still trim it down. Pardon?
Should I be trimming that?
I would still trim it down. They look so much better if you trim them down rather than let them kind of take off.
Now you're talking about the caryopteris now.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, I'll do both.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for the call. And let's see. Next, we'll talk with someone in Burlington, Illinois. This is line number 1. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I have 2 questions. I have some Virginia that were planted by a landscaper, but the spot is very dry and gets a lot of sun. And I'd like to move them to the east side of the house, but I didn't know if they can be transplanted and if this is a good time to move them.
This is an excellent time to move them. And they move just fine. And actually, you can probably divide them a bit. I don't know how long they've been there, but you can actually usually divide the crowns if you want to.
Oh, very good.
So this is a great time to be moving a lot of the perennials.
Okay. And then the other problem I have an iris bed, and I have a lot of quack grass that grows through there.
Yeah.
And all I do is pull and pull and pull.
Yeah.
Is that the only way to really get rid of it?
I would say your best bet. I know this is a lot of work, but you've already put in a lot of work just trying to pull it. And, you know, as you found out, those little roots, those little rhizomes, just stay there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you just pull and they just don't come up. Really, your best bet is to dig up the iris, all the irises, and then start separating them. And then you'll find all these white rhizomes. They're very white, very big, and that's all the quack grass. And that's going to be your best bet, and sort of fish all that out and then replant your irises. And in the long run, I know it takes more time, but in the long run, it'll save you time.
Is this a good time to do that, or should I wait till they bloom? Because when they bloom, the ground starts to get, you know, much drier and hotter.
Yeah, normally, if you were actually going to divide them, I would say wait till after they bloom.
Okay.
If you're just going to lift them, I guess one could say, and then just, well, you're going to have to pull them apart. I think I would probably wait till after they bloom. And then you can always water the area,
That's right.
A few days before you plan all this.
Okay. Thank you very much. Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to caller in Champaign and line number 2. Hello.
Sandy, is it too early to fertilize rhododendron?
Normally, we'd probably fertilize them right after they bloom. So I think I'd probably wait till they bloom.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I've always done it a little before.
Well, which is probably, I mean, and that's fine. You're really not hurting anything. I don't know, what kind of things are you using when you normally fertilize?
An acid fertilizer.
Okay. Yeah. If you were just putting on something like sulfur, just straight sulfur, you can pretty well do that any time. But if it's actually got some nitrogen in it, I think you're better off waiting until after they bloom.
Mm-hmm. And I have always removed the spent blooms.
Mm-hmm.
This last year I did not do that, and of course I've read that if you don't do that, the plant will not set new blooms. And I'm going to be interested to see just how consistent that is.
I would think they'd still set blooms. It just looks much better,
yes,
for one thing.
It certainly does.
And they tend, and you know, when you pop those blooms off, it actually kind of takes part of the stem, and then I think they break better. You know, they sort of send out new shoots better.
Yeah.
But it should, and actually, you should see the buds right now, because you know they produce the buds. You know, they've already produced their flower bud, so you should see this huge flower bud at the end to know whether you're going to have flowers or not.
Well, sometimes it seems as those flower buds turn into leaves.
The ones on the very top, those big, huge ones, should be the flower buds. So, unless for one reason or another the flower buds died, which sometimes happens.
Another question. I have quite a lot of bare spots. I mean, a whole area of bare ground in front of the rhododendron, which is supposed to be grass, but for one reason or another, it isn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's some acid-loving plant that you could plant for flowering in. I have mainly shade in the front yard, and so I was wondering if in that bare area I could plant something else, and even possibly supply a different soil right there.
And I don't know how far out you've been adding your sulfur or whatever. You probably haven't been adding it that far away, to be honest with you.
Well, I've always sprayed.
Okay.
That's the type of fertilizer I've used.
Yeah. I would think, you know, if this is one of the large rhododendrons, I'd sort of pull the new plants away anyway. So I'd almost bet by the time you get to the area where you're going to be planting, you're probably not going to see that much of a difference in pH, to be honest with you.
So, really?
Yeah, because you don't want the plants right next to the rhododendron anyway. You want to give them their own space.
Yeah.
So by the time you pull it out, I think you'll be fine. And most of our perennials will take a range of pHs. You know, they're not, they don't have to have it right exactly at 7 or whatever. So most of them will take a range. So I would go with any of the shade-loving perennials that you happen to like. I would think, you know, whether you're doing ferns or really any of the hostas, any of those things, I think will still do just fine.
Good idea.
Sure, and that would look very nice. And, they come up a little bit later, and that'd look very nice right there, I think.
All right. Well, thank you for the suggestion.
Sure.
Okay, thanks for the call. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580 in this hour of the program is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us once a month. We do these shows talking about things that grow in the home landscape, usually a Tuesday. She's here one day early. Same program, though. You have questions about things that grow outside in the yard, grasses, shrubs, trees, flowers, vegetables, or houseplants, too. That would be fine. Just call in, and whatever kind of problem you're having, tell us about it, and she will do her best to help you out. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Just real quick, I was thinking about going back to the caller from Aurora who's asking the question about ornamental grasses. I guess I was just wondering about things like that and whether you have to be worried about keeping those contained. Are they going to really want to spread on you and maybe get bigger than you would really like them to be?
And that's a good question, because certainly some of them do outdo their bounds. I think, number one, I'd always look for ones that say clump formers. So when it says it's a clump former, that implies that the clump just gets bigger every year rather than if it says spreads by rhizomes, I'd be very concerned, because that's when they really start to take off. And we have a few grasses that do that. So that'd be number one. I think it's a good idea just to sort of look at some of the things that are going on. And if it's one that seems to have a problem where it reseeds itself. And I think most of the catalogs are pretty good these days. The reputable ones are pretty good, as in they'll tell you it reseeds or something like that. And usually what I found is that most of the cultivars, the ones that actually have names with them, tend to not reseed as much. That's not always true. Some of them certainly still reseed themselves. But I guess I'm thinking like switchgrass. I see a lot more reseeding with the straight species, the non-cultivar, as opposed to the ones that are cultivars. They don't seem to reseed themselves as much. So there's a little bit of that going on. But I think just doing your homework and finding out what's going on. And your best bet is, you know, stick with some of the natives, like I was talking about. You know, big blue stems, a beautiful grass, little blue stem, Indian grass, switchgrass. You know, those are all native grasses and really quite lovely. And so that might be people's best bet, too, if they're concerned about invasiveness.
All right. Well, we have a number of other callers here. We'll get back to it. And starting with line one, this is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
It's just a comment about the native grasses, but people who use them need to know that they don't go with shade. So most houses, especially older houses, have big trees. And so a perennial will become an annual.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they have a litter problem. Big blue stem, if you like it, it has a, when it goes into the winter, it falls down like you put your hands around Skittles and it falls in every direction. Well, some people can't stand that, but if you know what you're getting, then you understand it's beautiful. So big blue stem, you have to remove that litter. And if you're in an urban setting, you have to do it with scissors or something, so because it'll need heat and light in the, into the body of the plant early in the spring. Indian grass stays a little longer, but both of them are fairly tall. The little blue stem is quite the diplomat of the crew. It sort of stays up in a clump and stays up all winter, and you can remove the litter about now. And it doesn't spread. Cordgrass has a rhizome, and it will spread.
Yes.
Wet situation.
Yes, I found that out. That one, it sort of spread everywhere. But yeah, even though it's native, So those are excellent points, and I think it just goes to show you everybody's got to do a little bit of homework. And there's no perfect plant.
You're using natives.
Yeah, right.
I was going
Good
to say
point.
Something else. There's quite a concern right now. Some people prefer to take the cultivars. Not necessarily U.S. natives, unless they're bred as cultivars, but they're invading the prairies, and there's quite a deal of concern about those plants moving into the native vegetation.
There's one in particular?
Yes, I forget its name exactly, but it's like about 8 feet tall, and you leave it up over winter and prune it about now.
Okay.
That one is moving into the prairie. And some of the switchgrasses are very, very aggressive. And they're being used extensively. And they've been bred for different purposes. Some of them can stay underwater for 8 days now.
Oh, wow. I guess that's a good thing. I don't know.
Well, it can be a good thing if you're in swampy areas. But it also means that Illinois is almost becoming the switchgrass state.
Right, right. But I haven't, I mean, my experience has been that the cultivars aren't nearly as seedy as the straight species. At least that's what I found. I have heavy metal and a few other cultivars, and they've never receded in my yard. But that's not to say they don't in other situations.
Anyway, I would encourage anyone that wants to do native vegetation. There's also a whole bunch of broadleaves that are very interesting.
Oh, sure.
But you have to read about it. One good catalog is Prairie Moon. There's several good catalogs around, but Prairie Moon, you probably could get it by prairiemoon.com.
Mm-hmm. Are they in Wisconsin or Minnesota?
Not in Wisconsin, but they largely got an Illinois gene pool because the guy's father was a prof at Northern Illinois University, Doug Wade. And that means that they're very sensitive to keeping a pretty natural gene pool. Prairie Moon. So, okay,
great. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Well, I guess there, again, it's like you and the caller said, probably the moral here is that if you see some kind of plant that you really like, whether you see it's at the garden shop or whether you see it in a catalog or you see a picture of it in a book or a magazine or something, just, you know, make sure that you know what the characteristics of the plant are, what it's going to do, what kind of conditions it really needs to grow in, so that you don't end up with something that's either planted in the wrong place, so it won't be happy, or it will do something that is its natural thing to do, and you won't like it and you won't be happy.
Yeah, I actually have a story of someone who told me this, and I couldn't believe they admitted it, but they actually way, way, way back when, they were traveling somewhere, and they actually dug up some Creeping Charlie because they thought it was so pretty and brought it home. And it is a pretty plant.
Well, it has a nice little purple flower.
It has a little flower and
a
nice ground cover, and they brought it home. But that just goes to show that's the other thing you never want to do is dig up plants from somewhere and then bring them where they don't belong.
Okay.
Lots of morals to the story today, huh?
All right. Well, we'll keep going here. We have some other folks to talk with, and Champagne is next. That's line 3. Hello.
Hi. I have some daffodils that were dug in a you know, during the fall from my mom's house in Ohio and mm-hmm. brought back here. And there seems to be lots of green. You know, they seem to be, you know, thriving in that way, but mm-hmm. not that many blooms.
Mm-hmm. Where, do you know how big the, you planted them?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how big were the bulbs, probably?
Oh,
pretty good size.
Inch or two. I mean, pretty good size.
Okay. And how deep did you plant them, probably?
I don't remember.
Okay. Because it could be... could be one of two things. And assuming you didn't plant them too deep or whatever, normally we're going to be about 6 inches or so, not much deeper than that.
Oh, I don't think it was any deeper than that.
Okay. And the other thing is it's bulb size. Sometimes if the bulbs themselves are not very big, mm-hmm. they'll send up green stuff and they don't flower very well until the bulb itself finally gets bigger. And that's what I really wonder, maybe what happened. Because I would bet when you dug them up, they were probably different size. Some of them are little, some of them are big. And so you more than likely probably planted all of them, and so you're going to get some of them that are, with the bigger bulbs are going to go ahead and bloom. The other ones just need more time.
Okay.
So I just fertilize them, get them going for next year.
When do you fertilize?
Right, after they bloom, when they still have, and make sure you leave the green foliage there and really care for them that way and let the foliage die down naturally. And I would imagine next year or so you'll find that they'll bloom better for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. By the way, somebody, if you're interested in that catalog or that nursery that the previous caller mentioned, we were talking about prairie plants. It is indeed called Prairie Moon, and their website is prairiemoon.com, and it's, they say it's a place for native plants and seeds for wetland, prairie, savanna, and woodland. And it is actually in it's in Minnesota. In Winona, Minnesota. And they do.
Wisconsin is.
And they do have that website. And through the website, you can request catalogs. Or I'm also sure that you can take a look at the website and see what kind of stuff they have. So that would be one kind of source for that.
And I think that, you know, that is one of the things. We always think about prairie plants in the prairie mm-hmm. and the ornamental plants and, you know, in our landscapes. But mm-hmm. There's so many of the prairie plants. They're just magnificent as ornamental plants. Purple coneflower is a good example of it. My gosh, that's, you know, it's a native plant, but yet, you know, people don't even probably think of it anymore as being a native plant. Certainly lots of cultivars now, but, you know, it's an excellent plant for a landscape. There's lots of them out there.
Yeah, rabbits like those coneflowers, too.
Yeah, well, they have to eat, too.
I told myself I wouldn't talk about rabbits, but...
But you had to,
didn't
you?
But I had to. Okay, let's go to Normal. That's a good place to go. Line number 4. Hello. Hi.
I just want to add to, I have a couple of questions, but Prairie Moon, I have bought from them, and they also, you can call them up, and they give pretty good advice. So
oh, good.
It's a good source.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And there is also a place in Mason City called Earth In, I believe, and they have a website. And
Earth, what's the second part?
Earth In, and, like.
Earthen? Oh, Earthen.
Earth In, oh. Like the place where you go stay at an inn? Like that.
No, Earth Skin.
Like Earth Skin.
Skin. Oh, wow. Okay.
Neither one of us had it over.
Earth Skin. Okay.
And they have prairie plants seeds, too, for and it is local Illinois ecosystem.
And I guess we should say this would be a good time. Grand Prairie Friends has their sale May 7th.
Oh, yeah.
So Grand Prairie Friends has lots of great plants May 7th at Lincoln Square Mall. So uh-huh. people can check that out, too.
May 7th?
Uh-huh. They have great plants, native prairie plants.
Uh-huh. I'll have to think about that. Mm-hmm. I do have a question about grapes. I have a deck, and then I have a pergola over it, and we eat there, and it's kind of sunny there. So I want something to cover, and I thought about growing grapes. And do you have a good book to recommend on how I grow grapes? I know nothing about growing grapes.
Okay. Actually, the University of Illinois Extension has a nice book. It's only $5, I think. But it's called Growing Small Fruits in the Home Orchard. And if you go to your local extension office there in McLean County, I'm sure they either have it or they can help uh-huh. you get it. But it's a really nice little book. It shows you, you know, it talks about what cultivars are good for Illinois, how to grow them, how to prune them, all that good stuff. And so it's a great, great starter book if you're interested in that.
It's called Growing
Small Fruits in the Home Orchard. So it has things like strawberries, blueberries, you know, all the those kind of things, brambles, grapes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, that'd be a good place to start.
But, you know, it's a sunny spot, but I guess the sun, it would depend on the root system. That gets sun, but you need sun also
for where the vines grow.
Right, for them to ripen properly and to get good air circulation so you don't have disease problems. So, yeah, they'll need some sun, too.
Okay.
So is there a tree there or something that's maybe concerned?
Yeah, there is a maple, but I think... But it'd still be, there's a lot of sun.
Yeah, I would suspect that probably. If it's
so
a sunny
spot.
That
would work, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My other question is, I grow a lot of native plants, or I'm trying to. Is there a book about how to grow plants from seed?
You know, there is, and I'm trying to think of the name of the book. And I think there's one, it's actually called Growing Wildflowers from Seed or something like that. It has that kind of a name. And I just don't, I honestly, I wish I could remember that right offhand, but I've got it at home, but I just don't remember what it is. You may want to check with your local library and see. So there is such a thing on how, and it actually goes through with such and such a seed, you need to do this and that kind of thing.
Because
so they're out, the info's out there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Very good. We'll continue, and the next person we'll talk to will be in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a climbing rose bush, which I didn't trim at all this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, should I just forget it this year? And when should one trim?
Mm-hmm. Is it a real early flowering one, or is it normally a summer bloomer, or do you know what
it's
kind it is?
Reasonably early.
Okay.
I mean, the leaves are all out.
But does it flower, like, even before mid-June, or?
You know, I don't remember.
Okay, that's fine. The reason I'm asking is the ones that flower, say, from mid-June, like they'd be flowering here in the next month or so, those actually bloom on old wood that was produced the year before?
Mine is blooming on old wood. I mean, mine is leafing on old wood. Yeah.
So well, it may leaf on old wood, but it doesn't necessarily bloom on old wood.
Uh-huh.
So that's the reason I was asking. And usually the really early bloomers are the ones that are going to be blooming on old wood. And so if you prune them now, you'd be cutting off all your potential flower buds. If it's a summer bloomer, then you could prune it now and not have a problem.
I see.
So if you're just not quite sure, maybe for this year, you might cut off anything that's obviously dead or diseased or whatever, didn't make it through the winter. And then see, and maybe even write on your calendar when it blooms. If it's an early bloomer, then you'd want to prune it right after it blooms. If not, then you can pretty much prune it whenever.
Well, if it's an early bloomer, you prune it right after.
Right after it blooms, right.
And how much do you prune?
That's pretty much up to you, depending on where you have it and how tall, how big you want it to get. But usually it's a matter of just sort of taking out some of the weaker canes and just maybe getting down to four or five predominant canes.
And if it's a late bloomer?
If it's a late bloomer, you can pretty well prune it whenever you want to. Normally, we'd prune it around the 1st of April. We'd be pruning it now if it's a late bloomer.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, most of the climbers that we have probably late bloomers, unless it's a really old variety.
It was here when I moved in.
Oh, okay. Well,
and
you may want to
a long time ago, 25 years.
Yeah. May want to check and see when it blooms.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. Let's go next to line number two, and this is someone on a cell phone. Hello.
Hi. I just have a question for you. I have evergreens all over around my house, and periodically some of the branches will go brown, so I know that, you know, some of the leaves are dying. What I did is I had to trim some branches of an evergreen so I could put up a privacy screen. And I did that over a month ago, and the branches are lying on the ground, and they're still green. And do they die?
Yes.
If they don't, are they dead if they're green?
Well, probably, I would imagine, I'm not sure what evergreen this is, but some of them will actually retain their needles and it still looks green. Yew is probably a good example. They kind of just go, they retain their needles, but they kind of just go a little lighter green. So it's you know, they're dead, but just, they don't know it yet.
I get that feeling myself sometimes. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Champaign. This is line three. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question regarding a peace plant. I have a peace plant, and it's in a pot that, I don't know, the diameter, it's maybe about a foot, maybe a little bit more. So it's a pretty big plant, and it's full, you know, the plant is completely filled up the pot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, do I need to trim it? And if so, how do I go about trimming it? Because, like, the leaves, the older growth ones, they're kind of browning a lot around their edges.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and it hasn't bloomed in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
in the middle, the greenery in the middle looks really healthy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, should I be thinning this out?
You may just want to divide it at this point if it's really getting that big. And I'm not sure you'd want to put it in a bigger pot, but it sounds like it's time for it to either be divided or put in a bigger pot. And this is a good time of year to do that when we get to that point where we have plenty of light and
How do you go about dividing it? I just dig down to dig up the root?
Yeah, I would take the whole thing out of the pot. And actually, this may sound really brutal, I know, but I've actually used a saw sometimes on these to sort of saw through them.
Saw through the roots?
Yeah, you actually saw through the whole thing, through the crown and the roots and the whole thing.
Huh.
And then you can divide it however you want to. A lot of times you can even get four sections out of it, or maybe you just want to take off the older stuff, or you know, you can kind of decide once you get in there what how big you want it to be and that kind of thing and go from there.
Will it be more likely to bloom then, because it hasn't bloomed in a few months?
I would say that might be number one of the issues is depending on the watering. I don't know, sometimes they'll get brown edges if they've dried out too much, and sometimes it's very difficult to keep them moist if there's just nothing but roots in there and not a whole lot of soil.
Okay.
So you may have had some issues where it's drying out too much, and then because of that, it's not flowering as well.
Okay. All right.
So,
well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I do that, fertilize it, should run with it.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have maybe about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. Show, if you have questions, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Probably we should mention that this weekend, it's Mom's Weekend on the campus, and there are a lot of things going on. Among them is the flower show.
Mm-hmm. The University of Illinois Horticulture Club Flower Show, our annual event. Everybody loves coming to this. It's at the Stock Pavilion on Pennsylvania Avenue in Urbana, and it runs this coming Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 5, and then 9 to 2 on Sunday. And it's just a great opportunity. And the students work so hard for this. They, you know, they do everything as far as getting the plants and doing the gardens. It's like this little mini flower show. And so you go in there and there's all these different gardens with different themes. And it's really a great opportunity to see what the students have done. They can use their creative skills and they work so hard to get it done. Plus, you can buy some really cool plants.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other good thing. And the Champaign County Master Gardeners will be there to help people out with their questions along with the students. So just a great opportunity. So it'll be this Saturday and Sunday at the Stock Pavilion.
Okay. Is there much action going on these days at the demonstration garden? Are there things actually really going out there? So
at the University of Illinois?
Yeah.
You know, they pretty much, because it's annuals, they're testing annuals. Uh-huh. It really doesn't get going till more. We start getting into June and July.
I guess I was also thinking about the one that the Master Gardeners have,
right.
That's sort of in that
there
same
There is stuff
area.
Going on there. There is stuff going on there. So if people want to come out to the Idea Garden, mm-hmm. that's also at the U of I Arboretum, yeah. if they want to go to the Idea Garden. And we have some things going on there. You can see some of the early flowering stuff. And, of course, we're just getting in the beginning season of things. But it's fun to go out, I think, throughout the season. You can kind of see what looks good, you know, even early. So
yeah.
I think, yeah.
Okay. Anything else in the way of events, things that are going on that you want to mention? Or pretty much the flower show is going to be
the big
thing. The
flower show is our big thing coming up. Of course, I know it's a long way off, but I guess not that long way. But the Herb Society is also having their plant sale May 7th at Lincoln Square Mall. So you can go out May 7th, Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, and you can buy herbs and you can buy lots of great prairie plants. So it's a great opportunity. And if you have questions about herbs and prairie plants, it's a great place to go. So May 7th. That's a Saturday at Lincoln Square Mall. That'd probably be another good thing to think about.
Okay. We are probably, I would guess, maybe about 10 days, maybe even 2 weeks, yet away from the average date of last frost, which is around the third week of April. So,
right.
And I'm just thinking about, you know, at what point do you stop worrying if you're going to put out something that's, you know, the other day we were out at a place where they had a garden center and they had plants out, and Mrs. Anderson pointed out that they had tomatoes, and I'm thinking, man,
oh my.
I think that might be just a little early for planting tomatoes. I'm sure that there are some things that you could plant now that it would be just fine, and if we got a little chill, it would be okay.
Right.
But certain other things, really tender things, you don't want to do yet.
Right.
Where is your point where you say, after this day, okay?
Yeah. Usually I say after May 10th. Okay. Usually. We actually can get a frost up until like May 18th or so. I mean, there's still a possibility at that point, but it gets much rarer at that. So usually around May 10th, usually I say if you can at least wait until Mother's Day, you know, after Mother's Day, that's you're usually pretty good shape. You know, tomatoes, this is just, you know, you're taking some risks. You're going to have to just make sure you really watch the temperature. And if it's going to get cold enough, you're going to have to cover them. And realizing covering is only helps for a few degrees. So you're kind of taking a risk. But certainly broccoli, cauliflower, pansies, you know, anything like that will take a frost just fine. So you can certainly put those out now.
Okay. So you about another month you're going to have to.
Yeah, I know. It seems with this warm weather, I think it seems hard to think we have a few more weeks, but
okay. Well, let's say we have a caller in Berwyn. We'll go in there next, line number four, toll free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have an endless summer hydrangea that my son and daughter in law gave me last year, and I put it on in the side yard, which faces south, but the home next door is about 15 feet away, I think. And during the summer, it grew and it had a few blossoms, but it got terribly eaten by insects. So we dug it up and put it in a pot on the back porch for a while, and then I had my son put it out west of the house, which is full sun. And my question is, can it take a place where there's, I'd say, maybe 4 hours of sun a day?
Oh, sure. Actually, hydrangeas do okay in some shade.
Yeah. What would be a good spray? I have no idea what the insect was.
You don't remember seeing anything? Or?
No, not a thing. It's just leaves got eaten horribly.
Okay. Not knowing what it is, it's kind of hard to tell
you.
Yeah,
I know. I wonder if insecticidal soap might do something.
Well, now, insecticidal soap is certainly a good pesticide, but it doesn't do any prevention kind of stuff. You know, it's strictly for when the insect's there, then use insecticidal soap. But it has no residual effect.
Oh, okay.
So that doesn't really help you too much. It wasn't like Japanese beetles. You don't remember seeing any beetles? Was that during Japanese beetle time?
I hadn't seen any bug at all. I just saw the effects that my husband insisted that we dig it up and bring it in, but I didn't think it would last over the winter inside.
Well, and you're right, probably wouldn't. The only thing I wonder about, you were saying it was kind of shady if it was even slugs. And that's the only reason I kind of hesitate a little bit, because certainly slugs are not insects, so you can't use the same products.
No, not. Well, I don't know. I know I've seen very small slugs around my hosta, but nowhere near this particular location.
Okay. Well, you may just want to wait and see as far as doing any prevention kinds of things.
When is a good time to, well, I suppose I could transplant it almost any time, huh?
Yeah, I would get it out there as soon as and transplant it now. This is a good time to be thinking about transplanting things.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. And let's see, next person up in line here would be Urbana in line number one. Hello.
When is the best time to transplant lilacs?
Now.
A small lilac bush.
Now.
It doesn't bloom anyway because it's in the spring. It's in the shade.
Mm-hmm. This is a good time, actually, for a lot of transplanting of things. Oh. It's an excellent time. So I would this afternoon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, again, we have some more time if somebody wants to call. I'm sure we can get it a couple real quick. Let's see. We talked a little bit about lawns. We talked about the fertilizing and weed control. Is there anything else that's particularly seasonal right now? I guess I can't, by now, certainly people should be out doing the kind of the cleanup, getting rid, cutting down the dead stuff and getting everything sort of all ready to go. We've got a lot of things that are flowering now.
Yeah, and pretty much if you had any kind of dormant things you needed to have done, you may have, like dormant sprays and stuff, you probably have missed it. you're probably late, so if you're going to plant it, if you still think you're going to do that, make sure you really check the plant because there can be some damage depending on what kind of spray you're using and what rate you're using. Some of them can be used later on and at a different rate. The same sprays can be, the oils can be sprayed at a different rate once the foliage comes out. So just really look at the plants before you start making those kinds of decisions. Certainly any kind of pruning that you needed to have done, I would be doing that now and getting that over with. So if you had any kind of shrub pruning, maybe you need to, this is the year you're going to cut down your privet shrubs, whatever, I'd be thinking about doing that now.
Okay. Well, let's talk with someone else in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning, Sandy.
Hi.
Lovely to be able to talk to you. Hi. A question about a Japanese red maple. It's almost a year planted now and has lovely green leaves coming out and so on. My question is about pruning. There are lots of branches at the top that seem to be going various ways. My husband says I shouldn't touch it so soon. But what can you tell me about?
So it was planted last year, is that what you said? Or?
It was planted last year, you know, wintered over, did mm-hmm. well. I mm-hmm. think it went in maybe in the early spring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. I mean, I think it doesn't mean that you probably the biggest thing on young plants like that is that this is a time to really start shaping it.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do a lot of drastic pruning 1 year. And I think for the young stuff, the thing to do is sort of look at it and say, okay, this year I'm going to take this little branch off and this little branch. Next year, I think I'll probably take this one off and that one. So you kind of have a plan over the next 3 or so years if it's truly one that you think maybe the shape isn't quite the way you want it. So kind of plan for it. And don't take off major branches at any one time.
Okay.
So that's probably the biggest thing on the young ones. And then as they get more established, then you can do, you know, maybe things that are a little bit more drastic. But there's no reason why you can't go ahead and do some shaping right now of some small branches.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. All right. Thanks. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up right there for this time around with the promise that next month Sandy will be back, probably on a Tuesday.
We think it'll be Tuesday. No, it'll be Tuesday.
And in the meantime, if you're interested in gardening advice and information, you might look, and you're in the range of our television station, WILL-TV, you can look for a program called Illinois Gardener, which is on when? Wednesday nights?
Thursday.
They keep moving it around.
They keep moving it around.
Thursday nights at 7 o'clock on mm-hmm. WILL-TV. Mm-hmm. And they do have the opportunity on that show to call in and ask questions. Diane Nolan is the host. So if you're into gardening, that's a show that you would like. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Programming here on WILL made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Monteverdi's Baroque opera The Coronation of Poppea with U of I students and period instrument ensemble Concerto Urbano, April 28th through May 1st. For more information, visit the website krannertcenter.com. Our show, Focus 580, made possible also with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Coming up later today on the Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn, the host, will talk with an engineer responsible for the structural design of hundreds of buildings and structures around the world, including the World Trade Center. And I'll be talking about some very basic questions like, how is it that the world's tallest buildings manage to stay standing? How is it they can withstand high winds, the winds, for example, of a hurricane or a typhoon? Those and other issues up for a conversation as Celeste Quinn talks with Leslie Robertson. That's following the 1 o'clock news today here on AM 580. The show itself, the Afternoon Magazine, gets underway at noon. Celeste Quinn is the host. In our next hour, we'll be doing the show that we call Talk to the Family Doctor. Dr. Jeff Swearingen will be here. He's a family practice physician from Carl Clinic, so we'll be open to whatever questions you might have on health issues. First, though, we'll take a break. We have news at 1 minute past the hour. Before that, an update on the market, so stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217